TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness.
Manhattan Project, number 2. Andreas Tupadakis and Helen Caldicott. On January 31st, 2000, an event happened in the San Francisco Bay Area that many people who had campaigned for so long for the abolition of nuclear weapons had waited for. A chemist who worked on nuclear weapons at the Lawrence Livermore National Lab left his classified position and joined the peace movement. Dr. Andreas Tupadakis left a well-paying job at the height of his career. Very few scientists have done what he has done, and even fewer have then publicly spoken out. Andreas Tupadakis had been hired under the Stockpile Stewardship Program. He worked at Lawrence Livermore Lab, and before that at Los Alamos, ostensibly to help in the disposal of nuclear weapons. However, he discovered that he was really helping develop a whole new, more dangerous generation of nuclear weapons, a project that he dubs Manhattan Number 2. He was honored at a reception by Physicians for Social Responsibility in Los Angeles at the beginning of April 2000. The Australian pediatrician and anti-nuclear activist Dr. Helen Caldicott was there, and she gave a brief introduction into the current state of the arms race, leaving time for Andreas Tupadakis to share his story and his thoughts. Here is Helen Caldicott.
America's building, designing, and testing new nuclear weapons, and you don't know that, under a euphemism called the Nuclear Stockpile Stewardship Program at the labs Lawrence Livermore and Los Alamos, spending $4.5 billion a year for the next 15 years. No one knows about that. It's about to go into space, and NASA presently, it's not looking for life in the universe, it's actually mapping the planets for rare minerals and the asteroids and the moon, and then it's going to send nuclear reactors up to the planets and the asteroids and mine the asteroids and the planets for the rare minerals and bring them back to Earth. Now, if America does that, clearly America has to dominate space. So the Air Force and NASA have combined into the US Space Command, and they're going to dominate space, not just this little ABM system that Clinton's planning, anti-ballistic missile system, which will violate the basis of all arms control, the ABM treaty, but they're going to have orbiting hydrogen bombs, orbiting nuclear reactors, orbiting laser beams, and they're going to shoot us down from space or shoot each other up in space. And they're actually mapping, NASA just did a satellite thing, mapping the planet for absolute accuracy. And people said, isn't that exciting? But it's actually to make the targets more accurate. That's what NASA's up to, and spending our money. And the third thing is the weapons are still on the highest state of hair trigger alert. We were damn lucky to have got through Y2K without a nuclear war. And the Pentagon were very scared. And they also used depleted nuclear weapons, depleted uranium in Kosovo and the Gulf War. 300 tons of depleted uranium are lying around as powder in the desert. Children are inhaling it. There's a very high incidence of malignancy in the children in Iraq. I spoke to a man who's measuring the urine of the vets from the Gulf War, the American vets, and apparently the amount of uranium they're excreting means they're getting a dose of 100 rems to the lungs, which is really high. They haven't got their cancers yet because of the latent period before the incubation time for cancer. The Pentagon knew that this is dangerous, and they're selling these weapons all over the world. So the Gulf War was a nuclear war. Kosovo was a nuclear war, and how dare the Pentagon use nuclear weapons? But they are. Well, it's subcritical. They don't explode, but it's still nuclear. So that's just a little bit of background. Now, into this scene comes Andreas, and I've just met Andreas Tupadakis today, and he's gorgeous. He's Greek, and if you've ever been to Greece, they're passionate. They're kissing each other, screaming at each other, hugging, arguing, and you think, thank God I've reached sanity, especially if you've just been in Germany and you've gone down to Italy and Greece. And he's one of these, and you know, you think of their lovely yogurt and, you know, fantastic smelly orange blossom and everything like now. So let me tell you about him. He was born and educated in Greece, as you'll hear. He came in 1978 for advanced studies to America, like we all did. got his PhD in chemistry in 1990 from the University of Michigan, and the same year he got his postdoctoral fellowship at LANL, Los Alamos 1990, where they design and make weapons. 1991 he worked for Dow Corning for 2 years, and I bet they're into weapons too. Everyone is. 1993 he went back to Greece because he missed it, and he taught for 2 years in Crete, Creta. And if you've been to Crete, it's so lovely. The university came back in 96 because he missed the sort of dynamism and the craziness here. I do too. And so he came back to Los Alamos Labs again in 96. And in 98, he came to Lawrence Livermore in California. And on January the 31st this year, he resigned for reasons that you will now hear. So here is a true hero of Greek style. So I honor you, Andreas. So now I want to ask you, how, Andreas, did you come to work at Los Alamos Labs? And did you know what they did when you went to work there?
When I finished from the University of Michigan in 1990 with my PhD in chemistry, I applied to several places, and I had about 7 interviews in different places. Among them was Amoco at Naperville, Illinois, Dow Corning, and some other silicon industries around Ann Arbor. And I also had a trip to Los Alamos, New Mexico, for a postdoctoral position at Los Alamos National Laboratory. I didn't have any problem with my conscience because I would be working with Dr. Gregory Kubas. His projects were really academic. They were basic research. They had nothing to do with nuclear weapons. So I didn't have any problem to go and work there. So I did go there, and I worked there for actually 10 months. At the end of the 10 months, I had an offer from Dow Corning, which I had interviewed, you know, 1 year before. And so they came up with an offer at that time, permanent position with a very good salary at that time anyway. And I decided not to stay in Los Alamos National Laboratory for the reason that I knew I would sooner or later be involved in nuclear chemistry, which I despised, because not because only for the reason they were using this chemistry, but also for the insanity of health risks. I remember the 10 months as a postdoc, I was going back to my children, and my children were at that time very young, and they would run in to hug me, and I would push them away and say, just wait. And I would go to the shower, take a shower, leave my shoes outside, take my clothes, put in a certain place, and then after then I could hug my children. So I did know that something is wrong here. There is something that is not really normal here. And that's one of the reasons, okay? There were many reasons I didn't want to stay there, but that's one of the probably major reasons. At that time I had not conceived very well the relationship between the role of the National Labs and the brutality of war in Iraq at the time. I used to be in my office in a trailer at that time as a postdoc. And I remember I was weeping, and I closed the door because I didn't want my colleagues to see me weeping because I was embarrassed. But I really could not relate the role of the National Labs at that time with the brutality of the U.S. government going around the world and slaughter innocent people. I never knew 1991, when I left from there, June of 1991, I would be back in 1996. In fact, after 5 years, I would be again there. I never dreamed that.
That is Dr. Andreas Toupadakis after he resigned in January 2000 from his job as chemist for the nuclear weapons labs. He went on to describe his work for Dow Corning, his return to Los Alamos, and how he eventually ended up at Lawrence Livermore National Lab. We return to his talk as he describes in some detail the nature of his work. Andreas Toupadakis.
I was working on analysis of nuclear waste from all these DOE sites from the Cold Era, all these tons of deadly waste, trying to put them in containers to store them somewhere in some Indians, poor people's, minorities people's land. Another is to take materials from dismantling weapons and recycle them and make them ready whenever you want to use them again for new weapons? Because nature in its own wisdom destroys these things. You should know this. Nature is against insanity. Nature is on the side of life. So in time, these materials, in a bomb there are hundreds of different materials, chemicals, and they're like demons. They're fighting each other to eat each other. And so after a while, they will not work the way they're supposed to. And so you have to make tests to see if they work now, or if you think they don't work, you have to dismantle them. And who's going to dismantle them? How are they going to do that? It's terrible things, terrible materials. They know it. And they find people to go, like me, I guess, but not for too long, to go and do these insane things, insane actions. So there are a lot of activities that they go on there. They go activities to dismantle weapons, to refurbish weapons, to make new weapons, to do environmental work. There's thousands of activities there. Pick up and choose what you want to do. But the fact is that there is no one activity there that is not related to weapons and making it easier to make new weapons. Because I had the illusion that by going to work in environmental work or non-proliferation work, I was serving the country or my conscience. But you don't. And this is the message that I bring, because I have many friends still there that's what they want to believe. Until Andreas came out, and now they don't even call me back. But I know it's a good sign, because that means they're thinking about it. If they would call me and say, Andreas, how are you doing now? Oh, yeah, okay, let's have a barbecue. That means it didn't affect them. But if I send them emails, so what I'm doing right now, and they know all my steps, whatever speaking engagements I have, and all the publicity that my act got, if they know everything, they didn't call. That means that their conscience is touched. And that's exactly what I want to do. I want to find ways that people like me in a prison will find the door to come out. Because it's a prison. It's a mental prison. In fact, it's a physical prison too. Because if you lose your badge, you cannot come out or cannot go in. You use your badge every day. So it's a prison with wire, just like in war. One day they tell you it's nothing but like radiation is like the sun. And yes, sun is radiation. But we're not talking about nature here. We're talking about the evil. Every evil that could be found in a man's heart become materialized. That's exactly what it is. All the fears that we have in our lives has been translated into deadly materials. This deadly material is nothing else but the product of our fears for survival. And we are not excused by that, because we've already been said, we have been said by wise and great thinkers of the past, not to worry about tomorrow. And because we do, these things is the product of our worries. Of every person on the planet, worries, the product is the nuclear arsenal, the weapons of mass destruction. They did not come by accident. They did not come by the nuclear scientists. They came from each one of us. Each one of us has built these weapons of mass destruction. And the only way to eliminate them is each one of us to take part of it, in it. The politicians, the military officers, the scientists like me, by themselves, will not do it. If there is a chance, if it's not too late yet, it will take the part of each one in every country to happen. And I was just in Indiana, University of Notre Dame. I was one of the 8 speakers, and I was fortunate and honored to sit next to Dr. Joseph Rotblat, who is the Nobel Peace Prize winner in 1995, for his act to do a similar thing what I did in 1944 as the hero of Manhattan Project at that time in Los Alamos. He was the only scientist to resign and say, I'm not going to do it. Because he found out that the Germans did not have the atomic bomb. In fact, they had given up the idea that it will not work. So when he found that out, he says, what is the reason to do this? And he gave up. He left. And I had the fortune to sit next to him and hear his personal stories from face to face. When he gave his lecture at night as the keynote speaker, he said, weapons, if people don't do anything about it, are going to be used, and they are going to be used soon. And he is a great thinker. He is 92 years old, and he has thought about this more than me, because I started thinking about this for 5 months now. He has been thinking about this for 45 years. He has seen how the chain of command works. He has seen how possible it is to happen. And people that come from within, they speak a very different language than people that are from without. And the message I bring is that you have power in you to change things. And in even the worst scenario, that you will not change things, you can walk through hell and still not be touched by hell. That's the message I bring to you. And that takes preparation, spiritual preparation, mind preparation. Because you can do that much by yourselves. And you know it. When you go back from this room, you know. You can do, and you should do. Every one of you. Write an article in the newspaper. Talk to your friends. Do something about it. And you do it not because you have to do it, but because it comes from compassion, from within you. And that comes from information. The information that Helen is giving you and me and other people, if you really realize what is coming up on the human race, there is no way that compassion is not going to rise in your heart. And that compassion will bring passion. And that passion will bring responsibility. And responsibility, personal responsibility, will bring peace. There is a group of people that have become so intoxicated from arrogance and power that they have a vision. And they have expressed it very clearly and loudly in reports, government reports, you can read it. By 2010, they have an intention to dominate space. And their dream is to dominate the whole world. This is the vision they have. And the vision that they have is by building more weapons to intimidate other countries so they will give up their weapons, so they will bow their knees down to them. And that way they will achieve their dream, which is to dominate the whole world. That was a dream 45 years ago, wasn't it? For somebody. It is the same dream. It's just switched land. It is not anymore in Europe. It has become in a different continent now. That is the plan, and it's not my words. It's very well stated in government reports. You can go and find it out. We have a leadership which is dominated by this idea, and we are building more weapons. The weapons we have right now can blow up, eliminate life from the face of Earth many times over. But we are building more weapons. The only reason we're doing this is to intimidate the other nations that they have as many weapons as we do, and at the same time to keep the paychecks coming in for the nuclear scientists. We're talking about here a nuclear industry, a weapons industry. If you sit down and analyze, you will find out that a huge percent of our world population today is working for the war machine. Believe me. People do not know it. They work in Dow Corning, they work in General Electric, they work in every company you can imagine. If you really search, you will find out that the secretary, scientists, and whatever, they are there. Their paycheck is really coming by working for the war machine, for building up the grave of humanity. And they do not know it because they never sit down and think honestly and investigate the actions that they're performing, whom they serve, and why.
So what did you do? What did you do at Lawrence Livermore?
I was working in stockpile stewardship program. It means that you're taking some bombs, you're opening them, you're looking what happened in there, you analyze the materials, and you're trying to find out if the other bombs that are there, deployed or stored, are going to work. They're going to kill billions of people. No millions, I'm talking about billions of people. They will do it. You want to make sure that they will do it. Because nature is destroying them, and you want to make sure that they will do it. Okay? And so here we have stockpile stewardship to make sure that they will work, reliable, and safe. But behind this is a tremendous collection of data that they are used to feed Manhattan number 2. We had the Manhattan number 1, 1945. If you read the open letter, the information that it's there, and many other information around the country you can get in your hands, demonstrates that we're talking about a new arms race. We're talking about Manhattan number two. They're trying to make more new weapons, new types of weapons. And guess how they do it? With your sweat. They're using your sweat to do these weapons. And they spend billions of dollars. Billions of billions of dollars to kill you one day. That's the bottom line. Why? Because they want to have a paycheck every month. I could not take the paycheck of $7,600 a month to my family and say, look, I can go and see my dad and my mother every summer. And I really like to do that. But when I was sitting at that desk, closing my door, crying, I was thinking, I made a promise that I want to help my mother-in-law to get out of that rent, that basement in Rethymno. I want my wife to find a job, and she still has a part-time job, no insurance. So if I give it up, I don't have any insurance. I want my daughters to go to a good university. How am I going to do this now? When am I going to find a job? How long am I going to have the house I have? I will have to move. Where am I going to end up? I don't know. So all these things were coming to my mind, but at the same time, I had seen the pictures of people like you all over the world being in agony. And you know what? Doing like this. Help. These days are going to come. If people don't do anything about it, believe me, these days have been described not by Dr. Tupadakis. They have been described by great thinkers of the past, Einstein, Jesus, many people have described these days. And if people have become numb, they cannot think anymore. You are here tonight. And I'm really encouraged to see people take some time away from their schedule and hear the most important thing in our lifetime. We're talking about the unborn now here. We're talking about the survival of the human race. And not only that, about yourselves. What guarantee to you that in 1 year or 2 years from today we're talking about, or 1 week from today, what guarantee to you that you will not be in an agonizing death? These are not my words. Listen to this. These are words from the Russell Einstein Manifesto. I was actually found out just 3 days ago by Dr. Rotblat's mouth that he is the only survivor of 11 signatories to Russell Einstein Manifesto. Russell was a Nobel Prize winner. He wrote a manifesto, and Einstein signed it just before he died. That was the last letter Einstein signed. In that manifesto, I take this statement. It says, the general public, it's you and me, and even many men in positions of authority, has not realized what would be involved in a war with nuclear bombs. The general public still thinks in terms of the obliteration of cities. People can scarcely bring themselves to grasp that they, individually, and those whom they love, are in imminent danger of perishing agonizingly. We appeal as human beings to human beings. Remember your humanity and forget the rest. That's exactly what it says. If we appeal as human beings to human beings, remember your humanity and forget the rest. If you can do so, the way lies open to a new paradise. If you cannot, there lies before you the risk of universal death. He didn't say, when this man wrote this down, he knew very well what he wrote down. He didn't know right an earthly death or a national death or a global death. He said universal death. And I don't believe there are many human beings on this planet where today they understand what universal death means. And I don't believe there are many that they can grasp what that implication has. In our way of thinking, we have seen to what predicament we have come because we're thinking logically all the time. We're trying to figure out things with our mind, not with our heart. And that brought us to this predicament right now, to have all these tons of deadly material that will be forever on earth. And I'm telling you this, Not many people can accept this saying. Usually scientists and educated people cannot accept this. Laymen, people uneducated, right on the beach, fishermen or farmers, they will be able to accept it. We, the scientists, the educated ones, cannot accept this. But this is my answer. If we do an act of love and kindness for all humanity on all earth, we have not seen yet the wonders that they are ahead because of the power of our heart.
You heard a rare document of history in the making, a talk by Dr. Andreas Toupadakis, a chemist who worked on nuclear weapons at Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore National Labs. For reasons of conscience, he left his well-paying job at the height of his career and joined the peace movement. This recording was made in April of 2000 in Los Angeles at a meeting in honor of Dr. Andreas Toupadakis, called for by Physicians for Social Responsibility. At the end of the evening, Dr. Helen Caldicott proposed a plan for setting up an institute in the United States to employ people like Andreas Toupadakis and to organize speaking tours to campaign for the shutting down of the weapons labs and the closing of nuclear power plants. Her plan connected with a proposal by Andreas Toupadakis to send a bus with a group of teachers from campus to campus. The traveling teachers, an engineer, a scientist, philosopher, and a medical person, would give joint talks on the nuclear danger. They would visit colleges since the hope for change, Andreas Toupadakis says, lies overwhelmingly with the young people. You heard a half-hour excerpt of a one-hour talk and discussion with Helen Caldicott and Andreas Toupadakis. The program for future nuclear weapons in space mentioned in this talk can be found on this government website, www.spacecom.af.mil/US space. Click at Vision for 2020. That's www.spacecom.af.mil/US space. Or go to the TUC Radio website at www.tucradio.org for a link to that site and a place to send messages to Helen Caldicott and Andreas Toupadakis. You can get a one-hour copy of this program for $12. Send your check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's $12 for the one-hour tape with Helen Caldicott and Andreas Toupadakis. Send your check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call TUC Radio toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by G.S. Sarstev. My name is Mariah Gallardin. Thank you for listening.